Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank PLC third quarter 2015 analyst and investor call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star and one on your telephone keypad. I must advise that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday the 3rd of November 2015. I would now like to hand the conference over to your presenter today, Mr. Sam Obioha. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Alex. Welcome, everybody. My name is Sam Obioha. I head investor relations. Sorry for keeping you waiting. We had some technical challenges before now. With me, I have the MD of Fidelity Bank, Sanam Dokonko. I have the executive director, Lagos and Southwest, Eka Andigbe. I have the executive director, corporate banking, Adeyeye Ibaba. I have the executive director, share services, Chijoke Ogochukwu. I have the chief treasurer, Chineze Osakwe, and also have chief strategist, Tabola Joshua. At this point, I'll hand over to the MBCO.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this Q3 conference call. My name is Nnamdi Okonkwo, the CEO. Well, like you probably know already, quarter three was a very tough one, much tougher quarter than previous. It was characterized by weaker macroeconomic environment on the back of dwindling government revenues, exchange rate concerns, rising inflation, lower consumer disposable income, tighter monetary policies. These were just the key indicators that characterized the quarter. However, we continued with disciplined execution of our medium-term strategic plan, focusing on improving our interest margins and driving the adoption of alternative channels. Key performance highlights are as follows. Our PBT improved by 3% to 13.8 billion, despite the lower volume of earnings assets driven by TSA implementation. Average yield on earning assets increased to 14.4% quarter on quarter, and our NIM moved up to 6.9%. Cost of risk stood at 1%, reflecting increased pressure on obligors. E-banking income improved to 4.5 billion, and this represented a growth of over 128% year on year and 115% quarter on quarter. It's one of the bright spots I've recorded this year, because if you recall, in previous conference calls, we kept emphasizing cross-selling of our electronic channels. It looks like the numbers are beginning to reflect success of that strategy. Now, deposit base declined understandably due to the public sector funds that were moved to Central Bank of Nigeria under the Treasury Single Account Scheme. Now, cost growth at 10.3% was slightly above the inflation rate of 9.4%. We are working hard to bring this down below inflation rate at full year. Our non-performing loan ratios remained at 3.7%, mainly due to the absolute decline in loan book and NPL volumes. I've significantly improved the coverage ratios on our NPL this year, anticipation of what is expected a difficult year for the banking industry. The loan book declined as we had a significant pay down from one of the telco clients who had to realign their business model, deliberately reduced exposure to the general commerce segment, because given the current situation in the economy, that segment faced some risk of bad loans crystallizing. However, some key sectors witnessed loan growth, including manufacturing and consumer loans. We expect loan growth to peak in Q4 based on some self-funded on-lending transactions that were currently that we have currently in the pipeline. On customer acquisition, we continue to grow. So we have now crossed the 3.2 million customer mark at the end of Q3. The increased customer acquisition helped drive a marginal increase in our retail deposit base in Q3. With consumer disposable income still under pressure. Now, we are also pleased with the increased cross-selling, which I mentioned earlier. Cross-selling of electronic products, like I mentioned earlier, you can see that it reflected positively in Q3 numbers. Well-known restrictions on FX trading, significantly reduced FX liquidity in interbank markets. And this has impacted our FX income in Q3. Recall that we had guided for a revenue growth for 2018 that will be driven by fund-based income, the strength of a 1% improvement in NIMs to 7%. So in summary, that's how our third quarter looked. I will now hand you over to Olaho, who will take us through detailed presentation. And then we'll take questions thereafter. Thank you very much, and welcome once more.
Thank you, Nandi. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Bola. Just an update on key recent events and policy changes. JP Morgan excluded Nigeria from the local currency emerging bond index. President backed the foreign currency control measures of the central bank governor. CBN implemented the TSA. CRR was reduced to 25%. During the quarter, a lot of that just took effect over. There's going to be a review of the electricity tariff. Foreign reserves is still at $30 billion, those 6 months import cover. Inflation is at 9.4%. Ministerial nominees have been confirmed. Now we're waiting for the portfolios for each person. The presidency spoke about a $25 billion infrastructure fund to stimulate the economy. Debt Management Office restructured the debt of about 13 state governments, issuing banks 20-year federal government bonds, and also began the disbursement of concessionary loans to liquidate the backlog of salary arrears. The loans will have an interest rate of 9% with a tenor of 20 years. We think when the civil servants start receiving a lot of this, which will be mainly in Q4, it will help to stimulate the economy. Just an overview of Fidelity Bank, nothing you don't know about. I'll just go to the financial highlights. I'm on page 8. Interest income was up 10.2%. Net fee income, 7.7%. Net interest margin at 6.9%. All led to a 3% growth in PBT. Our cost of risk was still 1%. NPL ratio still at 3.7%. Coverage ratio is now above 100%. It was 71.6% in 2014. We've gradually tried to ramp up the coverage ratio this year after the massive classification we did at the end of the last financial year. CAR is still roughly 21%. Liquidity ratio is 33%. LDR is 71%, and equity of 120 billion. If we go to slide 9, you just see the year-on-year change in a lot of the line. Total interest income, 7.8 billion growth. You will see a reduction in interest on customer deposits, but there's a growth in interest expense on borrowings, obviously due to increased borrowings and the 30 billion bond that we issued. FX income was down expectedly because of the FX restrictions. Ditto for COT, that's driven by the reduction in the rate. There's strong growth in the other fee income line by about 85%. We'll explain more of that when we get to the earnings analysis. So that led to a 9.7% growth in operating income, and then OPEX was up 10.3%. So on a year-on-year basis, profitability was up 3%. However, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, profitability was down 16.7%. If you look at interest income on liquid assets, that was down 18% by 1.7 billion. Obviously, we had lower volumes of earning assets. Fee income was slightly down 4.2%. Will not totally cover the shortfall in FX income from the other fee income lines, but had a very strong showing on the e-banking revenue line. And then net gains or losses from financial instruments came in positive for the second quarter. So provisions roughly now about 4 billion. And if you go to the next slide, which is slide 11, and it just shows a year-on-year comparison of the key balance sheet lines, customer Naira loans are down 2.7%, FCY 6.4%, a lot of that due mainly valuation impact. Cash and cash reserve and all that, and then you look at the deposit line, demand deposits were down 6%, saving deposits were up 8.2%, and obviously time deposits were down 12.9%. But if you look at it on a quarter-on-quarter basis, on slide 12, you'll see a marked reduction in customer loans, Naira. That was down about 20.8 billion. That's basically due to one of the pay downs we had in the telcos and the reduction in the general commerce space. Demand deposits in the quarter was up 2.9%, savings marginal growth of 0.7%, and then quite a marked decline in time deposits. Part of that was related to the movement of funds from the TSA. On slide 14, total earnings analysis, if you look at the quarter-on-quarter growth, interest income on loans has been going up quarter-on-quarter. Even though the loan book declined in Q3, interest income on loans were still up due to a rebalancing of the loan book. You see it tilts towards the consumer loan book. Interest income on liquid assets was down due to the lower volume of liquid assets. FX income was down. And then you see e-banking income basically double that on a quarter-on-quarter basis. On slide 15, you look at net interest margin analysis. Our yield on earning assets has moved up from 13.3% in quarter 4, 2014, to 14.4% as of quarter 3, 2015. Funding costs from 6.8% last year to 6.5% this year. So net interest margin has gone from 6% to 6.2% to 6.6% and to 6.9%. We think we're getting very close to our guidance number of 7%, but albeit now we're running on a much lower volume of earning assets. On e-banking income analysis, you just see the trend there. From 756 million as at quarter 3, 2014, we're now doing 2.5 billion as at quarter 3, 2015. That's almost threefold growth. That's an area we really concentrated on. We actually also deployed a new online banking solution. On expense analysis, cost growth year on year was about 10.3%. We still intend to bring the cost growth below the rate of inflation by the end of the year. Major lines driving the cost growth: technology cost, branding and advert, and then staff cost. But in a quarter-on-quarter basis, yeah, still technology cost, and then there's a decline in power cost. Obviously, there's been some improvement in the power supply and a reduction in the price of diesel. I'm on slide 19 now, where we just look at the funding structure. Our customer deposits were down 6.6% year-to-date and dropped 3.9% quarter-on-quarter. We were impacted and estimated roughly about 75 billion. As at end of September. If you look at deposit analysis, low-cost deposits is now 66% of total deposits. On slide 21, where we look at our retail banking analysis, retail low-cost deposits is now 188 billion. Savings accounts is roughly 106 billion. And then you look at the trend in retail assets after the decline in quarter one, where we went for aggressive pay downs because of the state of the economy. We've now steadily grown that book, also deploying the proceeds of the bond issue. On slide 22, just looks at the breakdown liquid assets position, percentage of our total assets, and then net loans to deposit ratio. Each ratio is at 33%, and LDR is at roughly 72%. On slide 23, that's the portfolio analysis. Year-on-year, major declines on communication, that's down about 30%, and general commerce down about 17%. The government loans are down about 48%. That's on year-on-year basis, obviously wound down coming into the election period. If you look at it on a quarter-on-quarter basis on slide 24, Oil and gas, no major movement. Power, still static. There's been some growth in manufacturing in quarter three. We were more disposed to funding the SMEs in that segment than those in the general commerce now, obviously because of the challenges a lot of the import customers are having with FX, and then some growth in the consumer loan book. On slide 25, FCY loans about 44% of the loan book, not really due to an increase in the quantum of those loans, but more due to a decline in the volume of LCY loans. And over the quarter, manufacturing and retail were the key growth segments, and then telecoms and general commerce were the areas where we had declines. And then if you just look at analysis of the NPL and NPL contribution for each of the segments, you see quite a marked decline in the absolute NPL volumes in the general commerce segment. That is not unrelated with the pay downs and collections we've also had in that segment from the absolute side of the loan book. So NPL is about 20.976 billion. Still remains at 3.7%, but with a much more improved coverage ratio. On slide 29, it just looks at capital adequacy. It declined slightly over the quarter because of the higher charge on market risk. Business segment analysis, corporate and investment banking contributes about 39% of revenues, 20% of deposits, and 70% of loans. Recall, earlier on, it used to be about 75 to 77%. We're trying to walk down that ratio gradually to about 60%. That will be in the medium term. On slide 31, it just shows what each of the business segments contributes on revenues, on deposits, and across the loan book. On our 2015 guidance, we've made changes to three key lines. I will revise the tax rate to 15 to 20% from 10 to 15% on the back of expected lower income from tax-exempt liquid assets. We think that will have an impact on our tax rate from our model. For deposit growth, we're guided for 10% before. We're guiding now for a decline of 10 to 15% based on current economic realities from the TSA implementation. And ROE post-tax, we had guided before for 10%. We're now guiding for 8.5% based on the impact of those two items on profitability. We're leaving loan growth at 10%, even though it's still behind target because of some transactions we already have, deals in the pipeline that will be self-funded and will not have to use our deposit base for. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. We have one question, and it comes from the line of Bunmi Asaolu from FBN Quest. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the presentation. First question is on the net interest margin expansion. I wanted to know which is more significant of the two factors you highlighted. So I think you said the consumer segment growth was part of the reason, and then the repricing of loans. So I assume that you're talking about two separate things there. So if you could just comment on which of the two had the more significant impact on the NIM expansion. Then on the OPEX trend, the growth below inflation is all good, but when do you expect that OPEX growth will start to flatten out or decline? I think some of your peers are recording flattish growth. I know that you guys are doing some brand work, but it would be good to just see that OPEX number flatten out a bit. And finally, going back to that consumer loan growth thing again, with all that's going on with macro, it's a little bit surprising that you're growing your loan book strongly in consumer. I'm just a little bit concerned on that point. And then on a slightly related note, I note that your oil and gas exposure, even though it was flat in terms of the loan book Q-on-Q, the NPL in the oil and gas segment has doubled since December. Now, again, that's from a very low base, so maybe nothing to panic about. But if you can just comment on why we should be reassured that consumer loans growing as much as they have isn't a problem, and that you've got a good handle on the oil and gas loan book, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Bumi. I'll start with net interest margin, which had a more profound impact. I would say the repricing had a more profound impact than the expansion of the consumer loan book. Consumer loan book is less than just about 12% of the loan book. And if you look at the expansion over the period, yes, it contributed, but we did some more repricing. On OPEX growth, OPEX growth will still be there in Q4, obviously because of the media spend we need to project the new brand. We still expect to close the year with an OPEX growth that is in single digit and not in a double digit. On consumer loan growth, if you look at Q4 2015, you realize that we came down heavily at the beginning of the year because of the pressures we had already anticipated, especially in the public civil servant space. Now, for those we are lending to now, I think there's a much clearer direction on the economy and on the states that have challenges and on the area that have challenges. So we think the areas we're expanding our loan book to, I think we have a much clearer direction on it, and we do not think there will be any concerns there. Over last year, I think we had to increase the provisioning on that book last year, or the NPL on that book, about 500 to about, I think, about 1.5 at a point in time. But from what we're seeing now, I think we're pretty comfortable with that. On the oil and gas, yes, even though the oil and gas book on an absolute basis did not really grow materially, most of what you see there from an NPL perspective has more to do with what I'll call the trading businesses and not anything to do with the upstream business yet. If you remember the last call, that we had restructured loans slightly over $400 million on that book. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Muyiwa Oni from SBG Securities. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. The first is on follow-up on your yield on assets. Just want to understand what your view is on yield on assets in Q4 and going into next year. And it's really more in context of current low interest rate environment and how you think that would affect yield going forward, because if you look at the trend, it's been steady from Q1. And then also want to understand how that also ties into funding cost as well. And then the second question is on your foreign currency loan exposure. I know you highlighted that the increase was really driven more by a reduction in the local currency loan book, but I wanted to know what your current comfort level is for foreign currency loans, and then what will drive the, or what kind of, what's the process of converting to local currency? So if you're in a position that you had to, how or what was the process of doing that? And then the third is, it's a bit more general, but it's on what's happening with MTN right now, and more just trying to understand exposure on your own, so how it affects you as a business, in the sense that given the significance of MTN in the sector and how that drives sector liabilities, what impact will the bank, the company having to pay a fine have on your business, in the sense that if it would have to withdraw some of the deposits in your bank, presuming you had one, how that will affect your business? Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Muyiwa. Yield on assets, our view is that we see the monetary authorities trying to stimulate the economy. I think they're more focused on growth now. So we anticipate there's going to be some easing in the fourth quarter, and we think it will lead to a slightly lower interest rate regime by the end of the year. In terms of how that will impact the funding cost, we expect it to reduce the cost of deposits once they do some form of easing. We'll also reduce the cost on savings deposits, which are tied to the monetary policy rate. For FCY exposures, we've always said that we're comfortable anything below 50%. Internal guidance will normally be about 45% for us. But in terms of conversion to the LCY loan book, most of what we have there are companies that generate their revenues in dollars. So in terms of conversion to an FCY loan book to LCY, except there is an express regulation by the authorities that you can't maintain, can't grant loans in dollars again, by which way that will also lead to the regulators having to provide dollars, you know, for those customers to be able to pay down, because you need to pay down on those dollar loans to be able to get a Naira facility booked. In terms of MTN, how important it is to our business, it is quite important. It is slightly one of the reasons, but not one of the major reasons, why we modeled also for a 10 to 15% decline in the deposit base, where we're quite strong both from a collections part of their business and both from a lending part of their business. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Okunri Boye Adevale from Arm Investments. Your line is open.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. I think my question was just on the oil and gas NPL. That's the doubling on the item. So maybe you could shed more light on the downstream related. What exactly is going on there? Is it that maybe, I don't know, but maybe you could just shed more light on what was the driver behind that? And then secondly, on your loan growth guidance, what exactly is driving that higher outlook for Q4? So I suspect, what exactly, which sectors do you think, or which sectors are driving the raised guidance? And I think that's largely all. Most of my questions have been answered.
Okay, for the oil and gas segment, so we've got the upstream, we've got the midstream, and then we've got the downstream. Obviously, you've got also got contractors that provide services to some of these oil and gas companies. And basically what we see is that more marginal people, you know, are getting what I call a shakeout. Now, being very prudent, and so I think the NPLs move from 605.1.2, an additional NPL of about 605. In terms of... on loan growth, the sectors driving it. Part of it is public sector. We're participating in the bailout, the salary bailout for some of the states. So some of it is public sector. Some of it will be manufacturing, where, you know, and for both instances, we're talking of transactions that are self-funded. So we're not going to have to use liquidity, and for some of the manufacturing deals, the liquidity will be provided from an on-lending perspective. I think we're already we're already 30% gone into Q4, and these are transactions we know we're going to consummate, or possibly some have already been consummated. So that's why we're still guiding for that 10% growth, which basically takes the loan book something roughly around 600 or above 600 at the end of quarter four. Thank you.
Oh, okay, then just a follow-up on your taxes, on your lower tax guidance, or your higher tax guidance. You said something about tax-exempt liquid assets.
Yeah.
Could you explain exactly what...
So, for example, if you look at our Q3 numbers, you see a lower contribution on interest income on liquid assets. Now, some of those liquid assets obviously are tax-exempt. So with if we're going to still maintain not the same level of profitability we guided, but slightly we believe a decent number, a lot of that revenues will now come from pure play loans, which are not tax exempt. So we're not likely able to have the type of effective tax rate we had initially guided for, which was 10 to 15%. I think now it will be more in the region of 15 to 20%. The lower income on liquid assets is also driven by the TSA implementation. So due to the TSA implementation, obviously, you see the volume of liquidity we have, and obviously the first port of call wind down on some of those assets. And if you looked at our Q3, Q2 numbers, you see a decline in our volume of treasury bills.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That'll be all.
The next question comes from the line of Ondubisi Obika from Stanbic IBTC Pension. Your line is open.
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation. I have a few questions. The first question will be how much your state government loans were converted to bonds? The second one will be, I need details of this restructuring you've done this year, especially as it relates to the oil and gas sector. Also, if you could mention what benchmark oil price you've done this restructuring. So I also like to know, I'm a little bit confused here. I can see in Q3 your cost of funding spiked, but at the same time your deposit mix improved in favor of cheaper sources. So perhaps you could explain why that movement.
Okay, thank you. I'll start with the last question on cost of funds. Yes, even though the deposit base declined, and you said the cost of funds went up. Yes, because during that quarter, that's when the TSA implementation was done. So these are balance sheet numbers. So obviously, a lot of that withdrawal was done in September. So, I mean, if you look at the average deposit book we traded with over the quarter, that was slightly higher. Secondly, there was increase in interest rates across, you know, across the industry because liquidity was tighter. In terms of restructured loans, overall, we'll be talking of something going to close to $450 million. In terms of oil and gas benchmark that we have used, we have basically used $45 as a benchmark. And then how much of government loans were converted, it was roughly about $4 billion. If you look at our presentation for the previous quarter, you see that our public sector exposure was just about $6 billion. So not all of them came in, not all the states were exposed to went in for conversion. So roughly about 70%. So we were not major beneficiaries of that.
Okay, I have some follow-up questions. Okay. How comfortable are you your cost-to-income ratio above 70%? It looks quite high for me, and perhaps you tell me what plans you have to bring these ratios below 60% if possible. Then I would like to know your cost of fund outlook for the rest of the year. Yeah, given the that, yeah. And also I would like to know what retail and SME loans, what do they constitute in terms of your total loans?
Okay, in terms of cost to income ratio, not going to come below 60% this year. We're slightly, you know, just a shade above 70 as at the end of quarter three. We obviously can't get it low at 60% this year. That's more of a medium term target for us. However, we are guided in H1 that we're likely to have a slightly elevated cost in the next quarter because of some strategic initiatives, which included the rebranding, which we think will flow into the end of this year. But we guess we will reap, we are already reaping some of the benefits, and we'll reap increased benefits from this as the time goes forward. Consumer loans is roughly about 10% of the loan book, and SMEs is right now roughly about 9% of the loan book.
Thank you.
And cost of funds outlook for the year, we believe there will be a slight decline in funding costs in quarter four, but we think this will only come into play after the next MPC meeting. That's when we expect the easing to happen. So for about the first half of quarter four, it will not have that low interest rate environment. But we believe for the second half of quarter four, that will come in. Already we're seeing some easing in lending rates. Some banks are already advising for lower lending rates due to the increased liquidity from the cash reserve right back from the implementation of the TSA.
Okay, thank you.
Question comes from the line of Soshi Fulenai from RankUp. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Soshi Fulenai from RankUp. I have a few questions. The first one is on your consumer lending business. If you can please just talk through where exactly are you lending to when you say consumer? What sort of consumers are these? And what's the average loan size, average tenor, and what's the NPL ratio of that book? My second question is around MTN. So you did mention that there's potential ancillary risks coming through for you from there. So what's MTN as percentage of your loan book and deposit? And also, can you shed some color as to whether you've been able to divest of your non-core holdings there? If not, how are you thinking about the potential risks from the fines and what that could mean for the valuation of what you might still hold? My next question is just thinking more around 2016. What do you think are the key risks to asset quality? Is it more a function of how long the depressed macro environment persists? And if that's the case, should we be more concerned about NPLs next year than we had this year? My other question is on interest rates. So if interest rates stay at current levels through next year, so it is interbank, below 5% or below 2%, T-bills sub 10, those sort of levels, how are you thinking about credit growth and margins in 2016? Those are all my questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So those are a lot of questions, actually. The consumer lending business, where exactly are we lending to? We're lending to employees of blue-chip corporates. Those are basically employees of clients we have in our corporate banking book. To an extent, some federal parastatals we are comfortable with, and in very lower instances, some states we are very comfortable with. But in terms of where the bulk is, it's to employees of blue chip companies. And what's the average size of the loan book? For the different types of loans, I would say it ranges between anything from 500,000 to about 5 million naira. We have slightly over 40,000 obligors on the consumer loan book. What is the NPL on that loan book? Right now, the NPL on that loan book is way below 3%. In terms of MTN, for total deposits for loans, it's less than 5% of the loan book. And in terms of deposits, it's way below 3%. But in terms of absolute volumes, they are still customers who term significant in both instances. In terms of the divestment, how do we think it will affect it? In guiding for a cost of risk of 1% for the end of the financial year, we've taken a slightly pessimistic view.
Hi, Bolamo. Sorry, the line went a bit fuzzy the last few seconds.
Okay, so I said in terms of MTN, it's less than 5% of the loan book and less than 3.2% of the deposit book. But in terms of absolute amount, it's slightly significant in each of those areas. So if you talk of top obligors in the bank, top 50, you will count them there. And if you talk of top 50 depositors also, you'll possibly also count them there. In terms of divestment, no, we've not concluded the divestment. The market has been quite soft. We think it will even be softer with the announcement that has been made, and we'll possibly have to write to the regulators to get an extension. In taking a view of 1% for cost of risk, we've been slightly pessimistic in terms of the fact that we expect the local price on the OTC market to be slightly affected by how this whole fine pans out, maybe from anything between 10 to 15 to 20%. In terms of interest rates, we don't think the present interest rate levels will suffice for next year. We actually think interest rates are going to gradually come down. We think due to the monetary policy easing, interest rates will slightly come down. How do we see that playing out next year? Well, interest rates will come down both from an asset perspective and both from a funding cost perspective. If you listen to the last MPC meeting, I think the focus kind of changed from exchange rate more now to avoiding a recession. The way we look at it, from where the central bank sits today, unlike other countries where people have to do some form of quantitative easing, a very simple way for them to stimulate the economy is just to reduce the CRR. We believe they're still sitting on something in excess of 3 point something trillion in terms of CRR. So they have the capacity to stimulate the economy. The issue is to drive that growth, we believe they're going to let inflation go, because if you increase the volume of money supply in the economy, there's likely to be higher inflationary rate. But I think at this point in time, I think growth is of a higher concern. Thank you. I hope I covered all the questions.
My question for next year was more of, so if interest rates stay at this level or lower next year, right, how are you thinking of credit growth for yourselves and also the margin outlook? And also,
if it stays at this level, credit growth is going to be quite muted, because realistically, at this level, you have to be slightly more cautious in the creation of assets, because it's a much more difficult macro. If it's lower levels, then I think credit growth will be slightly higher for us next year, because you have more obligors who are able to better navigate the environment. Secondly, we think consumer disposable income will be better. So in summary, if it stays at this level, credit growth will be lower than if interest rates are lower next year. If interest rates are lower, then that credit growth will be higher next year.
Okay. And on margins, do you think margins compress, or do you think you'll be able to sustain margins in that sort of environment? Assuming interest rates reduce.
Assuming interest rates reduce, and there's more availability of FX, we think we'll be able to sustain margins in the 6.5 for us to the 7.5% range. But without availability of FX, if the current FX restrictions persist, then we think that in that instance, then the interest sustaining the margins will be, I'll say, much more easier. But then, in terms of expansion on the loan book, it will be harder.
Okay. Then the final question would be on MTN. You mentioned a 10% to 20% possible haircut on the exposure, which is factored into your 1% cost of risk guidance. So the size of this exposure is how much?
The size of this exposure is slightly, I'll say, something about 3.5, 3.6 billion.
Okay. All right, gotcha. Thank you.
Okay.
We have another question. It comes from the line of Ondubisi Obika. Your line is open.
Hello, I have two follow-up questions. The first one is, I'd like to know how much you transferred to CBN as a result of TSP, and also how much received as a result of CRR reduction. Then the second question would be, I can see from your presentation that you secured $2.3 billion in branding advert. So how much more do you estimate that you're going to secure from this expense line?
Okay.
What time frame do you have in mind?
Sorry, time frame do we have in mind? For I missed the last question.
Oh, for this, the time frame you're going to spread this branding and advert cost. Should we expect everything to be completed this year, or will there be some rolling over to the next year?
As at quarter three, we were talking of the TSA cost. If I count as at now, We're talking of about 88.5 billion currently as of today. In terms of advert and branding, not everything you see there is in respect of our branding. So in terms of actual branding cost, actual cost of our branding, we've taken some of it in Q3 and we've taken the balance in Q4. However, in terms of advert spend, we are going to increase our visibility and our advert spend. So in summary, in terms of core cost of branding, we're taking everything in this year. We've taken a chunk in Q3. We take another chunk in Q4. But in terms of our normal media spend, if you look at our advert cost compared to our peers and compared to other people in the industry, you realize that for the past 2 years, we were coming from a very low base, and that's because we knew we were going to do a rebranding, so we were not very aggressive in pushing out the old brand. So next year, you'll see more media spend, but I think the most important thing for us is generating more than enough business mileage to cover up for that increased media spend.
Thank you.
All right.
We have another question, and it comes from the line of Soji Folani. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Soji once again. I just have one quick follow-up question. It was around asset quality. So my question earlier on was, looking into 2016, how are you thinking of NPLs?
Looking into 2015, how are we thinking of NPLs? I think our view of NPLs will actually follow from our view of interest rates. We believe that if interest rates come down, it should have a positive, you know, outlook for NPLs. However, if interest rates remain at this level and there is no easing, then we think there could be a slight increase in NPLs, especially if the current FX restrictions persist.
But I thought you mentioned that you know, banks are already beginning to reduce interest rates across the sector. So,
yeah, you see, like I said, so just some clients, some banks are beginning to reduce interest rates, yeah, because after the TSA debit, yeah, so what you get is you get a CRR write back, you know, and then you've got the bailout funds that are, you know, still in the system. But when all those wash off, you know, and you have all those spikes out of the system, so the bailout funds have been disbursed, the consumers have spent it, then you are back to the normal levels. We still believe that is a combination of two things. The NPLs is a combination of the interest rate environment, and is a combination, and it's also a combination of the availability, foreign exchange availability. There are customers who are impacted from a trade perspective, which also ties into the availability of lines for Nigerian banks from their foreign correspondent banks. So those two issues have to, you know, they have to move in the same direction for it to be positive for NPLs.
And nowadays, are customers still struggling to access FX? Is that still continuing at the moment?
Yes, customers are still struggling to access FX because it's not like the volume of FX supply in the industry has increased materially. So, yes, the question will be customers are still struggling to access because a customer cannot tell you for certain that if he needs $50 million, he's going to get $50 million.
Okay. Then the final question. So when I listened to the central bank or the MPC at the last meeting they held, the logic was that we give the banks all these funds, interest rate reduced, we encourage the banks to lend. But then also the macro environment does appear as if it's improved, you know, in any marked extent. So my question really is, even if you have all the liquidity and interest rates are low, do you think you would actually incrementally grow your loan book in that environment? Or would that be more a function of how quickly the macro improves and there's, you know, clarity on economic direction as well?
Excuse me, this is the operator. Just stand by while we try to reconnect the main feed, okay? That will take us a few seconds. Please continue to stand by while we try to reconnect your main feed.
Okay.
Excuse me, this is the operator. Your line is now back on.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, I'll try to reopen the line of Soji Folena. Your line is open.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hello, Saji.
Yeah, hi. So my question earlier on was just trying to get a sense of how you as a bank thinks of what to trigger credit growth next year. So the central bank, when they were easing the cash reserve, it was partly to offset the impact of the TSA, but then also they spoke about weaker growth and more liquidity, encouraging banks to lend. But then also on the flip side, the macro environment does not appear to have improved. So from where you see it, would lower interest rates actually trigger you to lend? I think that's my question.
You know, reduction of the CRR, that was in September, yeah, on one hand, and then additional TSA debits were done in October. So I think the additional TSA debits that were done in October effectively took out whatever impact the reduction of the CRR in September brought in. Secondly, in terms of weaker growth and will lower interest rates make us lend, lower interest rates on its own cannot just make us increase lending. You know, if the interest rates are low, you know, but the customers, for example, and I keep on using trade, interest rates are low, but if I lend a customer money, if he brings the goods, he's not going to be able to repay me because there is no availability of FX. So it could help trigger lending in certain segments, subject to the general overall macro. You know, if consumer disposable income is weak, if people are being owed backlogs of salaries, even if interest rates, you know, are very low, we will not be encouraged to lend to certain segments. So I think it's a combination of the macro, you know, the availability of FX and also the interest rate environment.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your question. We have no further question coming through.
Okay.
So actually, we have one question, sir. And it comes from the line of Muyiwa Oni. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my follow-up question. I just wanted to have an update on your dividend policy and if you'll be adjusting your retention rate. Just to, I think the reason why the question came up was really more because your capital adequacy ratio still looks robust, but if you look at the trend, it's reduced. And so for me, I just want to understand if that view has changed for now.
No, our dividend policy view has not yet changed. It still remains at the guidance we give, 30 to 50.
Thank you.
Okay.
It appears we have no further questions, sir.
Okay, so I'll now hand over to Namdi, who will just give the closing remarks.
Okay, so thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for participating in this call. Now, like we know, the president has just named the ministers, and shortly they'll be assigning portfolios. We expect that economic activities will pick up because now we know we'll begin to have a clearer picture of the economic direction of the new government. With that, we also believe that their focus will be on stimulating the economy for growth. So the impact of that we'll see by the time Q4 ends. Well, this is the last conference call in this calendar year. So we thank you for participating, and we wish you a Merry Christmas in advance and look forward to seeing you in the new year. Thank you very much.
So that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.